Let's just set our motivation for tonight and gather our intention for being here. Most of our life is done on autopilot, or we have all sorts of automatic motivations that we don't necessarily reflect on or question. So it is good to just start where we are. We are here at class, so something brought us here. And so bring that to mind. And whatever it is, it might be several reasons. And then, whatever our immediate reasons are, we can always deepen them, make sure they're really extensive, make sure they become Dharma reasons. So we just adjust our motivation. We use our own authentic motivation to start with, and then adjust it, train our mind and our heart. And recognizing that fundamentally we all have something really strong in common, which is the wish to be free of suffering, be free of our problems, and a wish for peace and happiness. And this is what makes us family. So we can adjust our motivation to encompass everybody, all the family within samsara. And then also adjust our motivation to really reach for the ultimate goal that we wish, not just a second-rate goal, but the very best purpose for being here. So is Holiness's prayer to generate bodhicitta. With the wish to free all beings, we shall always go for refuge to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha until we reach full enlightenment. Inspired by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, we generate the mind of full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. As long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, until then may we too remain and dispel the miseries of the world. Okay. Part of this theme of the Vajrasattva purification is that whole new problem areas become apparent that we didn't know that were there. And so we've got to make sure that we kind of balance it, that we don't get demoralized, too demoralized, that we kind of freeze up or freak out, but just take it as a good sign and renew our efforts. Because it is possible to purify. That's the main thing with the Vajrasattva practice. That the whole point of this is that it is actually possible to purify. So then it's worth seeing what we're to purify. But yeah, nevertheless, as you see, whole new vistas need purifying. We're just saying in reception, Ian was just saying how our awesome director, Stacey, let slip that she's just about halfway through. Rejoice, and at the same time, like, I'm ashamed. Well, that's going pretty good. Just sneaking past 30 is pretty good. 2000, cracking 2000 is great. The only thing we have to do is just pray that we live long enough to complete our 100,000. Whatever it takes, however long. That's right, Geshe Sherab said, you'll do it. You'll get it done. Don't worry, you'll get it done. He was just like, as if it's no big deal.
Like the story you gave about the obligation that he was made to say that.
10,000 Lama Tsogyal Rinpoche gave Geshe Sherab a commitment to say the Diamond Cutter Sutra 10,000 times. Well, it's not as long as some sutras, but he calculated it took 45 minutes to say. And so this was in preparation for doing long-term retreat. You need to create merit for the retreat to turn out well. It's no good just going into retreat just because you have time. You have to have merit or everything goes pear-shaped really quickly. So 10,000 recitations of the Diamond Cutter Sutra. So Geshe Sherab, he was telling us, he calculated, he's like, if I did that for 5 hours a day, it'd take me 4 years just on that, let alone all of his other commitments and things. So, my little commitment over here was like, no wonder he was so like, don't worry, you'll get it done.
You tried to negotiate with me.
That's right. Then he's like, okay. So then he made this joke about negotiating. So then he asked one of Rinpoche's attendants, can you ask Rinpoche, can I sponsor people to do recitations for me? Because if you sponsor people, you partake of that karma. In fact, you receive the same amount of merit as the person you've sponsored. It's like you double it because your intention is there. It's like if you look at it on a negative side, I could either go kill someone or I could hire someone to kill someone. If I hire somebody, then we both get the karma. So the same thing, you hire someone, you sponsor somebody to recite the sutra, you both get karma. You sponsor someone, many people sponsor nyungnes because they can't do nyungnes, then they get the merit. Anyway, so the answer came back, no. You have to do it all yourself. Then I thought, well, actually, I thought of another way that he could have bargained, but he didn't ask, which was, well, okay, if we've got the transmission, and the transmission means that it's like 100 every time you recite, it's worth 100 times, then will that. We're always trying to find caveats to things. And it's like, no, you'd still have to recite the same amount, but it would just mean that the value of it was bigger. When Rinpoche gives you numbers, because he can see your mind, he can see your karma. He can delve into the past and the future, and so he can see what you need to do to become free of samsara. And I mean, that was the incredible benefit of being able to ask Rinpoche for my life practices, but it was also the great terror of asking Rinpoche for your life practices. But again, something that Geshe Shera pointed out at the dinner was that when Rinpoche gives you life practices, they are to be done over the extent of your entire life. It's not that you have to do them all at once that year, because often that's impossible. And often a whole lot of things have to come together. Well, so Rinpoche gave the general life practices. So that's up on the FPMT website. It's like a prescription if what to do in this life if you want to become free of samsara. And these are the things that you do. I mean, it's just amazing. It's like the keys to the castle. So there are some other lamas that you can ask if there are specific practices. But basically, if you do these main ones, you including 100,000 Vajrasattvas, you clear the karmic undergrowth so that you create good conditions, so that all the things that you need to do come up in your life and you're able to do them. So even if you haven't got specifically this particular list, if you do these generic main practices that Rinpoche said, everything else will come. Yeah, and it's huge. So don't be frightened because it's over decades, it's to take decades. Part of it, of course, speech blessing, which we, have incorporated in, and the purification. So actually, I think we're going pretty well. And part of it is just flicking that switch in your mind to want to do it. Instead of going, oh no, and doing the whole bargaining and everything, to go, wow, I can. I mean, it's so rare to be able to take control of anything in life. And that's one of our greatest sufferings is having no control. And here now we can take control of our karma. I mean, it's really amazing. So especially with Geshe Zopa's encouragement, the way he teaches, I've kind of realized that he helps us feel really enthused to practice rather than a duty or an obligation or you should or all of that heaviness. And I think that heaviness might be kind of a Western thing. So now if I find myself falling into that, because it's like habit of decades, I just go, nope, that's just a bad habit. Doesn't mean anything. Find this positivity again of how fortunate. Wow. So just having the intention to do it and then you just do the best that you can. And sometimes it's great and sometimes sometimes, a couple of times last week, I just did one bunch of mantra. And then I woke up really early and did double the next day. So it kind of stretched it out. And it's just like, yeah. Or I did 21, but didn't do it with the booklet. It's better to do it with the booklet because it really makes sure that it makes it Dharma because it sets our motivation. If every now and again you can't, it's just like with any of the commitments. If you just bust for one day, it's like a big stretch. Then the next day you do it straight away in the morning and then you do it again that day and it stretches back again. If you leave it for more than a day, then trouble starts. But you can have a stretch like that every now and again if that's what it takes. And then, I mean, for me, it's just a wake up call that, okay, I've got to organize things differently because how I'm doing it's not sustainable. But with this little booklet, because it's like a miracle, this booklet, everything's in it to make it Dharma. And there is a danger that we turn our practice into spiritual materialism of thinking, oh, I've got to do this or that, or because I want to be happy and la la la, all of those things. And that's not Dharma. That's legitimate, you know, but it's not Dharma. It won't get us out of samsara. It's not with the big view, future lives, what happens next. You know, we've been going through this theme of so body, speech, and mind. So then I think last fortnight I was talking about karma ripening in terms of like the physical actions, the results. And I'm like, okay, so this next fortnight, let's focus on speech. And what do you know? Straight away, I'm like, oh, dang. The things that happened just a day or two after that class, we had puja here. It was Guru Puja with Sog. And the sound system blew up. There was no sound system. It just went off, flicked the safety switch and flicked off the lights on this side. So I'm like, couldn't quite figure out what was blowing it up. So we unplugged everything and we plugged the sound system in over here. Then this side blew up and then unplugged that and whatever and the computer. And so in the end, I had to leave the puja with no sound system. Which is okay because I was born with a loud voice, so that was fine. It all worked great, and my voice just gets louder with use. And so then it's like the very next day, I got our electrician in, and he came 8 o'clock in the morning, tested everything, nothing wrong with anything, turned it on, sound system's perfect, all the lights are perfect. Oh no, it's me, it's me. And then if you were at puja the other night, I was just turning myself on mute the entire time without, I don't even know how I was doing it. And in fact, now today, there's something wrong with the settings of my laptop, that the only way that I can get any noise into Zoom is to hook up to a microphone that does not exist and is not plugged in. But the one that is plugged in, it won't read. It's just blank. So anyway, go figure. So I'm having speech results of imperfect speech. I mean, one of the ways to purify your speech is to recite sutras and pujas and everything like that. So having to belt out the puja was like an excellent way to purify my speech. So I was super happy with that. You know, because I was thinking about it's the results, it's the karmic results is what's really interesting because it makes you look at your life differently. So a while ago, I had a run-in with someone and it was so serious and had gone over for so long that I made a complaint, but I wrote a really kind email and I was really measured and kind of light-hearted about it, but said what the things were and put in a complaint. Anyway, the complaint didn't go down well at all. And so the result that I got back was that this person counter-complained and then refused to engage. Just went, no, not talking to you or anyone else in the organization. And I'm like, what? You can't do that. But they did. And I thought, wow, that's a really effective way to shut everything down is just to refuse. Then I was thinking, well, so karmically, what's happening is I'm experiencing the result of a karma, and it's like the end of my karma. And even though it was so frustrating to have nothing resolved in that complaint and to be, you know, unfairly criticised about it, for me, that's the end of the karma. But for them, that's the beginning of their karma, being obstructive. Do you see that? It's a whole different way of looking at things. It actually helped me not take it personally and actually have some genuine concern, because, like, I know now I'm experiencing what it's like to be on the rough end of it again, but that's a result of my own past karma. In terms of things, actually, it wasn't that bad. But in terms of how we perpetuate our karma, it seems like the very worst thing that we can do with speech is to retaliate. So when someone accuses, you accuse back. You don't accept the accusation and look at yourself. Or if someone yells at you, you yell back. Or if someone says a nasty thing, you chuck it back again. It's like that tit for tat. And it's so ingrained in our speech. We can't control what others say, but we can definitely control how we respond, and so to at least not retaliate back again. Now, going through the whole thing, I think I've actually had a chance to work something out with that, to not retaliate and go, well, at least from my side, I was equanimous. The worldly response is to go back again harder, but this understanding of karma just saved me from that, to not escalate it or retaliate, and also to just feel really relieved that now that karma is over. And this is the only way that we will be able to stop reacting like in this samsaric kind of way, is to stop ourselves in our tracks and to go, well, at least that's right, I haven't made any bad new karma. And in fact, I've got to really work on focusing on my speech. So that was, so then I've got the one, the yelling. So the yelling and the, at least now I get to yell in a positive way instead of yell generically. And then the complaints and the slander or harsh speech back at me. And then the other thing that happened to do with speech, which is a little bit more subtle in a way, was over the last few years, I've lost a couple of really good friends. And what I've lost is that time where you have really deep conversations, deep Dharma conversations. And I really miss it. I really miss that kind of connection, because it's quite hard talking to people if they're not Dharma practitioners. What do you talk about? This is what they talk about. And so then I was thinking, well, what's that the karmic result of? And actually, I think so this sudden silence of not having those conversations is like a result of having meaningless chatter. What's often called out of those four non-virtuous things of speech, gossip or meaningless chatter. The silence, the taking away of those deep conversations, you know, what's kind of left? There's just this big gap. So what can I do now? Then I thought, okay, instead of just kind of being passive about this and enduring the silence, I've got to actually make an effort to reach out to people and make my speech meaningful. So what I did today was I picked up the phone and I made a phone call. So this has got to be like the first time in maybe 30 years I've made a phone call. I have a pathological fear of phones. I cannot talk on the phone. I feel so, whenever I'm talking on the phone, I feel like my entire space is invaded and it takes me ages to recover. And in fact, even at school, I was put in this remedial group where we have to spend one afternoon a week learning how to ring people up on the phone. And I would just spend the entire afternoon in tears. I just couldn't do it. It was so traumatic. Anyway, I got over this whole thing and I thought, there's this person I know who's quite new to Brisbane and could probably be feeling really out of their element. And I thought, I'm going to give them a call. And I did, it worked. It was good. Anyway, that's just some little notes about what you can do if you just focus a bit on one topic. And it all seemed to come together with this speech thing. Because, of course, one of the beginner's books that I read pointed out that The main way that we interact with others, with most sentient beings, is through our speech. That's how we make all of our connections. Like physically, it's mostly our pets and our family, but mostly all of our connections are through speech. So that is the most important way that we make connections with others. The other thing that I was thinking of, because we're reciting Vajrasattva mantras, we're actually remaking the way that we communicate with others, because we're remaking our speech. It's kind of like we're counting recitations, aren't we? We're actually changing our expressed dialogue, like our what we can hear, and pretty much at some stage of the day, we're going to be saying some of those syllables in that mantra. And in fact, I remember one of the ladies in the French center at Institut Vajrayogini. So for a while, it was Francois and his wife, Violette, and she's an ex-opera singer. So she would be working around the center, and you'd just hear kind of opera wafting off in the distance over the garden beds and things. And then whenever someone would be laughing, she'd be going, ha, 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 ho. And she'd be doing the flowers, ha, 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 ho. We can actually change the very the way we express ourselves. But also the whole thing about mantras is that they're a subtle movement. Like they're a movement, sound like music, it's a disturbance of the air. It's the air vibrating on our eardrums differently. So it's movement. What sound is movement. So it's actually then changing the movement of our subtle energy in our body and our subtle nervous system, our Vajra body, and getting that in tune really directly links us to Vajrasattva in that way, because it's the same movement as Vajrasattva. In a fortnight's time, so, you know, for the coming week then, fortnight, then we'll focus on the mind. So let's see what's going to happen with the mind. Hopefully I don't go crazy in between. But going over the 10 non-virtues, you know, the 3 of body, 4 of speech, 3 of mind. There was something that Geshe-la said that blew my mind, how he was saying, you know, when you're trying to describe sweet, you say, well, it's not salty and it's not sour and it's not, you know, all of these things. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. So you're trying to describe emptiness. It's not this, it's not this, it's not this. Of course, that's why it's framed in that way. You can't ever describe sweet. All you can do is narrow it down more and more and more subtle of what it's not, and what's left is what it is.